Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Hello?
You're on the air, yes.
Oh, yeah, that is Nasser. How are you, man?
I'm okay.
Good. Listen, this morning I heard the Prime Minister on the radio talking about you did the program, really, talking about the people in Europe and the pressure to put on barriers, ready to call up putting there, but you know about that. It's all doing money laundering and money shifting. And she made two interesting things in the program. She says she's a black woman and she's proud to be black. And she says something else about black. Why you believe she in the Jew? Why you believe she said that? You go in there, reason why you think she said that?
I can't speak for her.
Okay, but I ain't asking you to speak for her. I ask you your opinion why you think she said that. Because you can't speak for nobody. I can't speak for nobody. You ain't figure you don't got an idea why you think she would say that?
Because it is obvious, I suppose.
Oh, because it's obvious. Good, fine. So in truth and in fact, that is obvious that what he's saying from time to time is right too.
What's that?
But that the minority people in this country are putting the black people in this country under too much pressure.
But you've been saying that for how many years?
For a long time. And
right, and nothing has changed.
No, but it will change. It's a matter of time. Everything. You
no,
know
you had ample opportunity also to help change it, other than just talking about it.
Well, I do want to have a lot to change it. You think
what
just be
so?
Talking?
Talk to me.
You think I'll just be talking?
So what are you doing?
What I'm doing?
Yes.
I'm encouraging people in this country that block to mobilize the resources. I'm trying to get them to come together and blend the ability and unite.
Through what mechanism?
Huh?
Through what mechanism?
Oh, well, the first thing you do when you're doing that, my friend, is that you let people know that everybody don't need to buy the same equipment, that the equipment can be shared.
That's the talk. I'm going beyond the talk to ask you. What practical steps are being taken?
Well, just tell you the first thing you do, Mr. Ellis, and I know you know this. The first thing you do to move people forward, you have to talk to them and put proposals to them.
Yes, but that's the point I was making
proposals
from the beginning, that all we've had so far is the talk. It's no walk. You can come back to me after. You can talk a bit more about that. After the latest news, this is Down to Brass Tacks. It's now 12:46. I'm David Ellis with you up until 2 o'clock. I just want the Barbados Water Authority to be aware that there's a burst pipe at Windsor and St. George, next to Brighton Plantation. We are told here that the water has been flowing for 3 weeks. Okay. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Yeah, but Ellis is Nasser again.
Yes, Mr. Nasser.
Yeah. We're talking about the change of this country and bring more balance and things to the country, and you asking a couple of times, what am I doing? I'm doing a tremendous amount of things in the country. Some you will know and some you will not know.
Well,
right?
I said to you that I hear a lot of the talk, and you call this program quite often to articulate the position. However, the real acid test is, what are we actually doing? So you are now about to tell me about these projects and stuff that you are into.
Some of the projects here we are not going to expose. That's the truth. But
well, which ones can you expose?
We are not going to expose the projects that we are dealing with.
You told
with.
Me some of them you're not going to expose, which implied that some you could talk about.
Of course some we could talk about. We could talk about encouraging our people to invest the money amongst themselves and spend more money.
Where's the project? What is the project? That's the talk.
Mr. Ellis, I am not going to explain to you what we are doing.
Tell me you can tell me some, and now you're telling me you ain't giving me any at all?
Mr. Ellis, listen, I have the right to say things that should be said, and I have the right not to say some that are not to be said as yet. What I could tell you is that there is a serious program going on in this country, on the ground in this country, to mobilize the people of this country that look like me, resources, to start doing things for themselves and to demand that government share.
Well, I will wait to see that.
Well, of course, we're going to wait to see everything. I mean, you know.
Wait to see it.
Now, the next thing I want to ask you, Mr. Ellis, and don't take it as no disrespect, you just read the Bible.
Yeah.
No, I ain't mean that nobody. Let me tell you why I answer that, Mr. Ellis. So nobody don't believe that I try to make no.
You make a heathen out of me?
No, that's not it. Why you answer that, Mr. Ellis? I am reading the first five books of the Bible and taking them very serious. Today I was even Numbers. Mm-hmm. Do you realize that the black people of the world will have to be the Jews, the Israelis? Do you realize we are the only people that would not do things, and every time that God put some good idea to us, we refute it, and every time we don't see something that we want, we figure that God responsible for it? That's how the Jews operate. The Israelis fight in the first five chapters of the book. Anytime they don't get what they want, they tell God, you bring me out of Egypt. You bring me out of Egypt for us to suffer. You can never understand why our people in this country, with the work that Earl Waldenbar have done to put this country on a track to success, high education, natural ability, talent in almost every field, and yet we are still subservient to people. They are Barbadians too, and we want them to succeed too. But I'm trying to find out why we so subservient to these people when we have all the ability, the lawyers, the doctors, the money amongst black people, everything to mobilize ourselves and go forward. And yet we seem to be afraid and want to go back to Egypt. We all want a minority group of people to control us.
Well, I say to you mm-hmm. that we have this talk ad nauseum. This is bare rhetoric. At the end of the day, we need to be able to move beyond the talk to actually get people mobilized to achieve the objectives that you're talking about. In the meantime, all the talk isn't going to take us anywhere. I have been around long enough to hear this talk for years, and that's all we get. And we have a new group of people who come, and the old order remains the same. And what are we achieving by merely talking and doing nothing more?
Let me tell you one of the first things that we will be about to achieve. Stop putting people into parliament who, after they get into parliament, look after their own interests and do not.
How are you going to stop that? I don't know how you're going to do that.
Mr. Ellis, that's the problem. You see, you have to understand that it don't work in this house. You have to plan things and plan things and plan things. You know that. You didn't get from where you were in
But, Mr. Nasser, I want to say to you that you are in a position where you must be able to show us some tangible result from all of this talk.
Take it easy, Mr. Ellis.
All right, will you give me the assurance, therefore, that when you get to the point of being able to deliver, that you come back to me and talk this talk?
It is not I, it is we.
Okay.
Not you included. It is we for us.
All right.
In other words, it is not NASA. Is NASA and a group of people who work it for us.
I don't want the talk. I want the walk. I'm tired of hearing the talk.
You can't run a horse.
All right.
You got to train the horse and get the horse right for the race.
Because of the time that I have spent in this country and the degree to which I have heard all of this, I have become impatient and also skeptical of all of the rhetoric. I have listened to people, as politicians especially, come and feed the people of Barbados with all of this talk about change. Build up your hopes. And when you're finished, little really changes today. Little. There are some areas where you can say it's incremental, but the big ticket items do not change. I was a boy at school when you had husbands wrought iron as a prominent black business person in Barbados. Coming out of that, I have followed you from Gary Husbands to Mohammed Nasser. And I have followed the talk for all of these years. That's why I tell you, having had such a long period of listening, we want more. We want to see things put in place that actually help to make, to move. Let them come. All right.
They're coming. I really can't say certain things to you yet. I've been working on here.
Well, let's move on. Let's move on then. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah. It's with some concern I'm calling you about this situation with the Ellis and the COVID and the, oh my. Mm-hmm. I am of the strong view that two tests doesn't seem to do it. I think they should increase the test. But my emphasis today should be on vigilance and quarantine of people and leaving the quarantine and breaking the quarantine. That is where the emphasis needs to be laid, because you need to monitor people to a finish. And then when they're released from the quarantine, well, you know they're clear, etc. But this is a tough one for Barbados. I am hoping all the best. I'm hoping that everybody work in unison and try and keep things as good as they practically can. It is a rough one, but the authorities are going to work around the clock. I know they're going to do their best. All right, my next one now is about the St. George North. I haven't spoken to you about the St. George North by-election as yet. Well, the candidates are out, and a gentleman was, he and myself, we were talking Saturday, and he made the point, suppose they're five parties or so?
About five, yes.
Good. He made the point, suppose you have the government in already, but let's say two parties win a candidate each.
What?
How you'll be able to determine
what? What's that?
He was making the point.
Two parties would win a candidate each, what do you mean?
All right, listen to the question. Listen, no.
Let me hear.
Play off. We were discussing, he says, there are five parties. Let's say for argument's sake, mm-hmm. that they had, he was making a point, not in this year. See, he was saying a general election. He was making a point in a general election, because what he wants to highlight is that if you get a government selected and there are two other parties with a candidate each, how the opposition would be formed. That's the emphasis. How the opposition would be formed. He says it's a constitutional situation. And he says it goes on all the time and they never stop to look at, suppose that happened, what would you do? Because you don't have a dead heat. You think you understand what I'm saying now?
You say it isn't relevant to this particular by-election. And
right.
Therefore, this is conjecture. It is hypothetical.
So yeah, but what you're saying is it still exists out there. Or there's also the talk that if, for argument's sake, right now the opposition leader is Bishop Adley, but if the Democratic Labour Party candidate should be successful, how would the opposition leadership?
It would most likely have to be determined, I suspect, between the two of them.
No. If both of them remain adamant, what happens? That's what we discussed too.
I don't know. One would have to get some kind of advice on that. But we're not there yet.
But you see where you put it up there now?
He
and I, we were discussing. I time we can answer, but we bring, I guess, Peter Wickham or Israelin or somebody that is an attorney on constitutional law or somebody, but he's made a good point. I tell him I can answer by brain and let other persons get a feedback as regarding. But he says, if you look at it, it's saying that can happen, because don't forget, in politics, same thing can happen. Don't forget, last election, a party got 30 love.
That's
so
true.
Anything can happen. I've been around, I see somebody win a candidacy by one vote. I've seen all kind of things, so I am not putting it down. That isn't like that. No, it can't happen. Not when I see what can happen.
Okay.
It's happened already.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Down to brass tacks.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Yes, I'm calling because I was listening to the discussion about the Senate, and I actually sent you a note, but I also heard a call, I don't know if I should call his name, on the program, and he made mention of the West Hall. So I thought I would call to share some thoughts on it. Because, first of all,
Maxine McLean, right?
Yes, Max Remus. If you look at the Constitution of Barbados at Chapter 5, Paragraph 36, Section 4, it says that 7 senators shall be appointed by the Governor General, acting in his discretion, by instrument under the public seal to represent religious, economic, or social interests, or such other interests as the Governor General considers ought to be represented. So in the context of the discussion that you had, what I suggested is that you have a situation where you have somebody appointed, and as I pointed out in my note to you, based on a comment made to me very early in my life in the Senate, that, and as I summarized there, from at least as I read from the Constitution, independent senators are usually appointed to represent various interest groups. And in the words of an independent senator who served while I was in the Senate, she said to us, being an independent senator does not mean that you do not support a particular political party. But, of course, you were not appointed there. And that is a person, as I describe it, that is a personal right of yours. What we have here in the nomination, or the planned nomination, because the nomination day has not yet come, but the identification and the public proclamation, for want of a better word, of Senator Tony Moore, we have an independent senator who has formally gone beyond her private right to support any party she speaks, so to speak. She has moved from what I call private support status, which it was unknown or undeclared, to a candidate for the Barbados Labour Party. And so, as such, she can no longer be considered independent. You did correctly point out that at nomination, that appointment will be rescinded, I believe is an appropriate word. So in that sense, any action prior to that, I mean, there were sittings of the Senate subsequent to the announcement of her candidature. And I believe that, well, I certainly could only speak for myself. If I were in those shoes, even though I might not have had my appointment withdrawn by the Governor General, I would not have attended sittings. So I think that is something, to me, that's a personal ethical position. So the idea is that you're there representing the interests, and we know based on her employment and elevation to General Secretary that she would have been representing Labour. I want to look forward, though, before I touch on Suvez, and the question would be, and this is something that I would find interesting, and I think that's what the caller, her fellow unionist, may he called, would have been probably alluding to. Looking forward, the question I would we wait to see answered: should Ms. Moore lose in her bid for the St. George North seat? You answered the question that I posed then, because when I look back at the rules, she would have been removed. Now, the question is, would she then be appointed as a government senator, which I believe is likely. That takes me now to the matter of Suvez Hall, because I took the time after hearing the caller to call Suvez myself to get some facts. I like people, you see, a statement was made without elaboration, and without the elaboration, it misrepresented perhaps the historic facts as they are. So I called Suvez, and just for the record, he said he was appointed an independent senator between 1971 to 76, and I believe that would have been soon after the end of his cricketing career. So he served for that five-year period. And he said to me in 1981, he was asked by Errol Barrow, then Prime Minister, now national hero, if he would join the party and consider and run in an election. So there was a five-year period between when he sat as an independent and when he got actively involved in politics. So he was not in the Senate at the time when he became a candidate for the Democratic Labour Party. Having run in the election in 1981, he lost, and he was appointed a government senator, along with Evelyn Graves in that year. So I just wanted the facts to be there, because, you know, sometimes people take information knowingly or unknowingly because they don't have the details or they don't have the full facts before them and paint a picture. So I just wanted to clarify. I made a point about independent senators, why they're appointed, and in the case of Suvez, just to set the record straight, that he would have served in the Senate as an independent. There was a five-year break. He ran, he lost, and he was in the Senate, and in 1987 he became a minister. So I just wanted to put those facts on the table.
Thank you very much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm good too, Mr. Ellis. Now, last Monday when I was speaking to you, you got flooded with a lot of WhatsApps and people messaged into you and all of that. To the point where it had you overwhelmed and amazed, Mr. Ellis. But I was trying to get back in because I was holding on there and I was trying to interject. I see that as your own making, and as the old people that say, when your own dog bite you, that you're well bitten. I've been preaching to you and Mr. Beckham all the time, do not read none during my call. I'm not interested in these people that hide behind these things and do them. And I'm glad to see how it had you last week, so you can deal with that. Now, I see an article there that the St. George North getting more. But I want to remind them that the workers got less. Remember that the unit was asking for it.
Your call is breaking up a lot. We can hardly make out what you are saying.
Well, I don't know what happened after the phone going down our walk. I've been holding on a long time. But the workers got less. So I am hoping now that the people of St. George North can work it out for themselves, whether it is more or less. And I would like, you say you don't want the canvassing, and you don't want this, and you don't want that.
No, I just said I don't want the canvassing. I didn't talk about this and that.
Everybody is on edge. But
who's on edge?
I want them to work out whether it is more or less.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, sir. It's scratchy connections, perhaps on your end. And don't blame us that you've been holding on for so long. You know you're calling Brass Tacks. So you put your phone to recharge overnight so that when you get here, you know, you won't have power problems. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good
you're on
to
the
you.
Air. Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm wonderful. No, there's something that amazes me. We have some experts, and I think my great-grandmother or somebody gave me an elucidation for experts, persons who know more and more about less and less. There's a special guy who comes on all the time. I don't call names. Last week, he talked about shutting down the country in advance of the forecast about the flooding. But would he ever, did he listen to the world news? There was a hurricane approaching Miami, and thousands of people evacuated. And then suddenly saw the hurricane bypass. But thousands of people, you know, evacuated. And Miami is a big place when compared to Barbados. Barbados is just one little dot out there in the sea. So, and we have the state-of-the-art equipment, just probably like people in the United States. So when the slightest little thing could happen and it could bypass us. So when you could bypass a whole big a place that's bigger than us and go up to North Carolina or wherever it is, and you can complain about that. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. When it comes down to the disability and of Sir Roy, you are saying that the man, nobody knows when a disability will come. You'll be living in the moment right now, and suddenly so you have a stroke, a heart attack, or whatever it is, and put you in a precarious condition. So if you're in a wheelchair, the wheelchairs are not only made, were made precisely for people to have mobility. And if you have to be lifted on the platform, and if you have a sir, it does not make, to my mind, sir does not preclude you from running for office. Of course, you get a sir at a very young age, at a young age for the work you've done in the country. You can tell me that that is not your human right to go and run for politics. staff serves in the British government, I think in the Commons, who run for elections. I mean, I can hear so this body and so that body on the floor of Parliament in the United Kingdom. So what is so wrong about Sir Roy with his disability? And they don't cry down people with disability. We in the disability place, don't need your sympathy. We need anything. Well, give us empathy, but not sympathy. And one has to realize that. When you look at, we had in the Senate, there's a person with disability that was the chair of the Senate. Fantastic person, doing a great job. And then you had the guy who was called the economist, was also disabled, but yet he was in the Senate, doing a fantastic job. So because you have a disability, or because you have a sir behind your name, it does not stop you from recognizing your human right to do the things that you need to do as an individual. So to cry down somebody with a disability is ludicrous. And then one goes to look at the whole question of, I think that person paints cars or whatever it is. When every paints a car, when he gives somebody an idea that he can give them in 2 days, sometimes when the person get back there, he can't get it up to 4 days. So don't come with those kind of outlandish kind of things to confuse the public. And furthermore, the whole question about wearing masks. When you listen to the scientists, you must listen to the scientists. I'm glad that you went to really, I know you tolerate persons who come with all kind of views, which is good. But at the same time, you try your best to put them in the right direction. And I must compliment you on that behalf, David. You did a fantastic job. Because there are lots of things that are happening that people don't seem to, they have their own preconceived ideas, and they do not listen to other the people. This is a pandemic all across the globe. And therefore, the scientists will come and tell you the best way to protect yourself. Like there was a scientist in the United States who came and said, I prefer to wear the mask because I feel the mask is more important for me and my health than the injection.
Okay.
So these kind of things we have to look at.
All right, sir. Thanks for calling and sharing your views. Dr. Brastax, hello.
Hello. Good afternoon, David.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes. I want to talk about... I want to offer a solution for the fiasco there with the common entrance exam. But
common entrance? You mean CXC?
CXC, yeah, CXC. I want to say a little bit about NASA, though. I do hear your conversations with him from time to time, and I know you ask him to what has he done and if he implement anything. As I said before, I see it as something like a marathon or one of these races where you pass the baton from one to the other. We call
a relay,
yes. Mm. And I think NASA doesn't have to do everything because NASA is not fighting for NASA as far as I'm concerned. He's fighting for a people, and there are thousands, millions of people in the world like him or who he's talking on their behalf. So I don't see it. If you come up with the idea and sensitize people that there is a problem. Because one of the problems I think with black people is that we didn't know our history, and some people are bringing it out for us to make us conscious. That's one part of it. But then there are other people then who have to take the baton and move it. So he doesn't have to do everything because he come up with the idea. So I say it may be a little unfair to press him all the time to tell us what he did. But I also want to point out that he has done things because, as I said before, I am in a business, and I didn't even know that I am in this business today through NASA. And I didn't, well, I know him because I've heard of him and so, and I'm sure he don't know me. But I have trained a lot of people, too, who go out there and don't know that they have benefited from NASA. In the business that NASA was in, and we are not in the business that NASA was in, by the way, we are only in it because NASA apparently on his trips overseas used to look for business ideas and concepts, bring them back, and probably let them loose about the place. So I happened to encounter it from somebody who had benefited, and then they told me sometime back that they already got this equipment and idea from NASA. So I am saying that to say that he had done things not even knowing. You know of Stuart Rotan, an engineer, work, the guy that owns in One Accord. He's also a student at NASA as well. When he's a student, where he worked and was trained there, he got his skills from there. That company throughout so many people today in Barbados what, top-class welders, own their own businesses, probably done better than NASA. And that, and all of these are people who benefited from NASA's motivation, because I would say inspiration, because inspiration is a big key to getting people going sometimes. A lot of people sit there and they don't have the motivation, but when they see somebody like them who come from humble backgrounds, reach a certain level, they're inspired to do it. So I'm asking you not to beat up on NASA so much and asking him to go and show what he has done. He has done things he don't even know he has done, right? So much for NASA. About the not common entrance, the CXC exams. Now, yesterday I was on and I spoke, I heard Miss the lady for the union, I can't remember her name though, but Rosemary or somebody like that. She said that before
Marianne Redmond.
Sorry, yeah, Marianne Redmond. She said that before the exams were taken, she was aware that the format had changed and that there would be issues probably of the scale that exists right now. I am saying that Miss Redmond should have dealt with it before the exams, but she said in concert to that she did indeed write CXC expressing her concern or disagreement with it, but it still went on. Now, a union is very powerful because she's saying that they don't have the authority and the ability to cause CXC to change its mind about anything. But I'm saying that as a union, you can. And I've seen Mayor Redmond exert a lot of energy and effort in things that, to my mind, didn't concern a union. For example, when the private sector was complaining about the NSRL taxes, that has nothing to do with teachers. And yet still, they invested a lot of time in dealing with that. That energy could have been exerted here. And besides that, she was saying that they had issues for years, and top of years. I never fought the issues with the same vigor as she fought for NSRL, which had nothing to do with her. Right? So I am saying that part of the responsibility and blame must go there too, because you don't just blame CXC, because they had the power to stop CXC if they wanted to. And I say that by protesting. You could have protested and marched up and down. You could have collaborated with all the unions around the Caribbean because they're interlinked. And you could have gone on all of them to stop. Nobody did CXC. There couldn't be any CXC today. But now I want to look at the solution, Mr. Ellis, to this problem, because you know the strike. I heard on your news item just now that they're going to run a little walk or something this afternoon. And the thing about it is CXC under real pressure, because the people want results and they want them now. CXC is going to do a review. The university that some of these people are going to await on want results now that they can start, because they're already late. So how can you satisfy everybody? Now, there isn't a panacea for the issues, but this is what I think could help. I believe that CXC, for this one occasion, should issue everybody with a pass grade, and a grade one at that. In this case, none of the people are complaining that they thought that they would do well or the children would do well, but they've gotten poor grades. None of them can complain because you get a good grade, give everybody a grade one. The people at the bottom now who apparently had good grades, and people are saying that probably should have failed, they ever keep the good grades, because you can't take away a grade from somebody who had a grade one, because you're looking for court action. Even if that person really didn't pass, you already give them a grade and they're already probably hooked up with a university overseas or locally, you can't go and rescind or recall that grade, no. So they will keep the grade. Those who feel that they were unfair, give them a good grade too.
All right, sir.